to Planetary Spirit, coming to you on ETIN, Emerson Talk and Information Network. My name is Jeff Ferranini, and I invite you on an exploration of spirituality. And my guest today is Tonya Pinheiro, a wake-up artist. A wake-up artist is a term she coined in 1997 to describe her mission and work as a sound healer, inner life and dream facilitator, and ascension path practitioner. Now let me tell you a little bit more about Tonya Pinheiro. For more than 30 years, Tonya has worked with individuals and has created and led ceremonies, workshops, study groups, retreats, and performance experiences for the purpose of helping others and herself wake up to a full awareness and expression of our divine nature. Her passions are to explore the nature and landscapes of sound healing, dreaming, beliefs and assumptions, and to provide tools, insights, and opportunities to achieve personal and spiritual growth, awakening, and expression. And her website is http://wakeupworks.org, which is wakeupworks.org. So it is indeed a pleasure to welcome today in studio, Tonya Pinheiro. Hey, Tonya, how are you?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm very well, very well.
And
it's nice to have your smiling face opposite me here.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to start this off with something that you sent me that just kind of tickled me a little bit and also got me to think that this is perhaps the essence of who you are, at least certainly brings out the essence of who you are. And it's a particular quote, and I just want to read this, or maybe you'd like to read it. It's this quote right here.
Oh, it's something that I have like at the bottom of my email messages.
Okay.
I pledge allegiance to inner and outer truth, to the United States of consciousness, and to the oneness for which they stand, one heart inside the divine, fully visible, with peace and understanding for all.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a plagiarism of the
Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance,
absolutely.
Yeah. Not a plagiarism, but like an adaptation, I guess.
Well, it's a Tonyaism.
Yeah.
But it's nice. I mean, I like the fact that you've taken something that we've all been indoctrinated with, inculcated with, kind of it's seeped into our DNA, and yet you've brought this now to a universal expansive understanding that kind of makes the tent a lot bigger so we can all stand in there and underneath it.
It kind of does, and it really reflects my belief systems and
Absolutely.
How I'm living my life.
Absolutely.
And, so that's why I put it there.
well, that's what I got from it, that you were, you know, that this was integrally who you are.
Right.
You know, right. At depth and in wholeness.
Yeah.
How you see yourself and also kind of your vision of how the world can be.
Exactly. The inner and outer truth for me is the essence of where my path began.
Okay.
And
ooh, talk a little bit about that, where your path began. Yeah. Let's go there.
Okay. Now I call it the ascension path, but at the time that I got on it, I didn't have that word.
Okay.
And I only knew that word from my Catholic upbringing.
Sure.
But as soon as I got out of high school, I became part of a group, singing group, our rhythm and blues and pop and so forth, that we called ourselves the Indigos. course, this is in like 65 to 69.
So that indigo, not that indigo.
Correct. But we didn't know that we were talking about that, the indigo that we know now.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the reference when I said, when I discovered indigo children, I was like, oh, we called ourselves the indigos. We must have been onto something. That experience was brought me right to the brink. That singing experience brought me right to the brink of stardom. Okay, we were with the hottest producers at that time.
Wow.
But they only wanted me. They didn't want the whole group.
Oh, boy.
And I made a choice not to do that.
Wow.
Because I couldn't leave. I mean, these are people I've been singing and making music with.
Mm-hmm.
From that moment, from that decision, things started going downhill for me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two very traumatic nightmares.
Mm.
I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my mother, Mama, what do these dreams mean? I won't go into the dreams right now because I want to get to the other thing that you actually asked.
Okay, that's fine.
But I ended up going back home from Washington back to Boston. And my mother said to me that you need to get a day job. You need to get some kind of activity that takes your mind off of yourself for at least 8 hours a day. So that's when I began working at the Department of Public Welfare as a payroll clerk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would come home at night and my mother and I would sit down and we would start working with my dreams.
Mm.
And I would tell her whatever dreams I had written down, and then she would begin to ask me questions. And my mother she kind of shifted from being my mother to being my coach and therapist.
I get that, yeah.
And it was a clean transition.
Also like spiritual guide.
Well, that's exactly what she was. She was really good at asking me the right questions.
She was letting the process lead. She didn't have a name for what she was doing.
Right.
She was just allowing spirit to guide
her.
That's
exactly right.
Yeah.
Today we call it coaching.
Yeah.
Whereas the coach's job is to ask the right questions to bring...
Absolutely.
So you can bring your answers out.
Yeah, yeah.
What I discovered in going through that process was that there was an inner truth and there was an outer truth. And the outer truth had to do with my relationship with others and the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the inner truth had to do with who I was versus who I thought I was.
Okay.
And so that whole time in my life really was about getting clarity around who am I really. Because who I was at that in my early 20s was all ego-created defense mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Through the indoctrination of what you were taught.
My life and
environment. And how you were supposed to be. And
life experiences and all that stuff.
Yeah. So you were kind of waking up to the deeper truth of who you as a divine being were starting to see yourself as.
Exactly.
And that's a little bit scary, I would think.
Well, it's very scary because I was going through a process of deconstructing, dismantling, blowing up everything that I thought I was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, without knowing that there was something else to take its place, it became a terrifying process.
Mm-hmm.
I went through so many stages using my dreams as like this stepping off place. I went through so many stages of discovery and fear, and like every form of fear that could ever be, I walked through it. And every form of shame, I walked through it. And every form of anger and rage, I walked through it. And every form of like all these emotions.
Now, why were you doing all this work?
I was doing this work because my mother asked me this question. And she asked it of me three times. And she said, I can put you on the path, but once you're on the path, you cannot get off. Do you want to do this?
Ooh, that's a pretty heavy duty question.
It was very heavy duty.
Yeah. And you're how old?
I was probably 21.
Mm.
And the path that she was talking about, she had given me a book on yoga, breathing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to ask you a question before you go into that, if you don't mind. Who was your mother?
My mother's name was Mary Elizabeth Wilkins.
Okay.
And then she married my father, mm-hmm. Samuel Range.
Mm-hmm.
So then she was Mary Range.
Mm-hmm.
And she was born in 1918.
Oy.
She was born into a well-to-do family.
Mm-hmm.
She was half Indian and half Native American and Scotch English.
Mm.
And the, I think her bloodlines informed who she was.
So she was really working from some very old, handed down knowledge.
Yep.
That might have even been orally transmitted from person to person.
Right. But it happened for her, it was who she was as a spiritual being that this information came from, as well as her knowledge from reading.
But she was awake and aware
of
who she was in order to be able to stand in the world in the way that she was standing.
Right. Right.
And in order for her to be able to, quote unquote, rescue her daughter when she needed to have divine intervention.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
She was a person who allowed me to learn, encouraged me to figure things out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
From the time I was a little baby, like when I first started walking and talking and stuff, she was constantly saying, all right, what color shirt do you want to wear?
You make the choice.
You make the choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. She did that to me my whole life.
Okay, so now I got to know. So she's asked you the question three times.
And I've said yes three times.
Oh, you've said yes three times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what happened then?
I said yes because I knew that whatever she was talking about had to be better than what my life had been up to that point.
Okay.
Internally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said yes. So that's what got me, okay, now we're going to start working with your dreams, and now you're going to be able to, and she was teaching me from a Jungian psychology standpoint about all the archetypes and the layers that you go through in your dreaming process. And
now, is this a woman that had any kind of letters after her name or anything?
She had a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
In, I think it was in psychology, and she was a nurse. She went to nursing school. She wanted to be a doctor, but she wasn't able to do that because at the time she was growing up, the boys got to go to medical
school. Yeah, women
weren't
doctors at that time.
That's right.
Yeah.
She could speak five languages.
Okay, so she had the intellect.
Yeah, she was very intellectually.
Yeah. And she also had the spiritual mojo behind her through the lineage.
Yes, she did.
And maybe even in the spiritual ethers, she knew she had been.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So I was very fortunate to have her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or to have picked her, they say.
Yeah, that's right.
So as I'm going through this process, I'm coming from a view of myself as Miss Goody Two Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I was very obedient and very compliant and very yes to anything and whatever I can do to make you happy, and I just want you to like me, and that's all I care about.
Mm-hmm.
So I will do whatever is necessary to make sure that you like me. And so my first foray into breaking out of my self-image was when I had to tell the guys in the group, the singing group that I was in, that I couldn't sing with them anymore. We had just made a record. I was singing lead. They were singing background. The band was on flip side. Anyway, and they were going to release it in September, but we recorded it back in April. And so from April to September, the whole band fell apart. And I had to tell them, because we weren't getting work. The manager, we had a new manager, and he wasn't getting us work, blah, blah, blah. I was terrified to tell them because I was singing lead, you go on tour, whoever's singing lead is singing the song.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not there, they can't do that.
Right.
I told Jerome, and his reaction to me, which I was ready for the onslaught of like, oh my God, how can you do this mm-hmm. to us? And he took his put his hand on my back, and he rubbed my back, and he said, it's okay, I understand. And that just melted me. Because it was my first time of saying to somebody, no, essentially no.
A big no.
A huge no.
Yeah.
That had a lot of repercussions.
Sure.
So that showed me that my fear about telling somebody no
mm-hmm.
wasn't necessarily true.
Mm.
Like, if I say no, they're going to do, mm-hmm. they're going to hate me, or they're going to yell at me, or mm-hmm. whatever. And that didn't happen. And that was a good thing. Because then I began to test it, and test it, and test it.
But where did that bring you to such a cathartic place in your life that you needed to leave D.C. and then go back to Boston? And
because...
know, how does that start you on your spiritual path?
Because of those two dreams that I had. That's what finally made me like decide I have to go back home.
Hmm.
In the outer world, we were in Washington, D.C. and in Arlington, Virginia. So there's a five-piece band and me in Arlington, Virginia. And there's the three singers and the drummer in Washington, D.C. So we couldn't rehearse because we mm-hmm. didn't have transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So that started the kind of breakdown. Then mm-hmm. the manager's not giving us what we need in terms of work. He's involved in another project. So one by one, the horn players start to leave.
Mm-hmm.
We were like one of the very first interracial bands at that time. So then I have these two nightmares. The first one is I'm walk into this room and I see these footprints on the floor. And I begin to step into them. But they don't go left, right, left, right. They go left, right, side, right, flat. Left, side, tippy-toe, flat. Right, left, tippy-toe, side. So they're going in all this like really strange configuration across the room, up the wall, into the corner. And I'm trying to make my feet fit into this as perfectly as possible.
Mm.
I'm in the corner now. I have no place to go. And I'm like, oh my God, now what do I do?
Mm.
Dream ends, new dream. I'm terrified of bugs. In this dream, I am being attacked by bees.
Mm.
They're hitting my arm, hitting my arm, hitting my arm, and I can feel them hitting me. And I'm like just ready to die over the terror that I have. They're not stinging me, however.
Mm.
They're just bumping up against me, and
which
I wake
is not
up
a
from
good
this.
Feeling, sure.
Yeah. So I call my mother, and I tell her these dreams.
Mm.
Ma, what do they mean? Well, let's see. The first dream, you're walking in someone else's footsteps. It's driving you up the wall. You're backed up in a corner with no place else to go. Mm-hmm. And then the second dream, something's really bugging you. Now, when she said it to me like that,
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Well, duh, you know, but it was all in pictures.
Right.
But as I'm describing it to her, she's seeing the little cliche phrases.
But
that
isn't
it was,
that the way spirit tends to come
well,
through
yeah.
anyway?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's when I discovered, I mean, my work with her and the dreams helped me to understand that dreams, for the most part, they're telling you about yourself,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, but
mm-hmm.
not always.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, they come in pictures so that the rational mind can't mess with them. But then you have to figure out the language, like what's the message that's coming through. So this was like, I did steady dream work for easily 25 years before it kind of faded out of my life for a
mm-hmm.
little while.
Mm-hmm.
I had one moment when I was sitting at the table with my mother. We were having a conversation, and I felt this thing happen to me. I started to see my mother's aura glow, this warm, rich yellow.
Mm.
And then I felt this tube of light descend over me. I could feel it. It started, you know, like if I lift my hands up above my head, it started from up there and it slowly came down. And as it came down over me, everything washed away except this exquisite peace, feeling of peace, all the way down over my body.
Oh boy.
I'm sitting in the chair. Perfect. It shut me down vocally, like I couldn't talk anymore. It had weight to it, but it wasn't heavy. And I lasted for about at least 4 to 5 minutes, and then it went up.
No sound, though, of course.
Sound. And then it went away, and it was like, when it was gone, I knew that I had experienced the Holy Spirit. I knew it. I told my mother what just happened, because she watched me go into this like kind of like...
beatific state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when I decided, I want to be one with God, and I will do anything it takes to do this.
Now, what did your mother say?
She said, okay.
Did she witness any of that?
She saw it happen, but she didn't see it happen.
Yeah.
Like she saw me kind of...
she saw your reaction to it.
And my reaction
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
But she didn't experience what I had just experienced. But that event made it clear to me that there is a God, made it clear to me that it touched me, and made it clear to me that I wanted it.
Now, would you call that, I mean, it's always hard to put these things into language, but what seems to come through for me is, would you call that a state of grace?
Absolutely. It was a state of grace, but it was also a real thing that happened. So I've been in a state of grace at other times in my life that felt very different than what that was.
Okay.
What I really think, even as I'm saying it to you now, my I Am presence made itself physically known to me in 3D.
That's what I think happened. I like that.
And because the I Am presence is that individualized essence of God, it had that effect on me. Because what I went through after that was so excruciatingly difficult.
Horrendous. I knew that was coming.
It was... I think that it knew that I had to go through what I had to go through. So it's like, I think we better give her something as incentive.
Just a taste.
So she knows that what she's going for is real and that it's attainable. I have never had that experience ever since. But my life has been wonderful ever since. After that, I would say eight years of like excruciating deconstruction and reconstruction.
Well, we're going to take a short break now, but Tonya, you're not going anywhere, are you?
Okay, I'll be right here.
You're going to stay right there. Okay, great. So you're listening to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Ferrinini, and my guest today is Tonya Pinheiro, who is a wake-up artist, and her website is www, or is it HTTP? Which is it?
Can it go either way? It can go either way.
Okay, so we're going to say www.wakeupworks.org. That's WAKEUPWORKS.org. So that's where we're at right now, and here's the break, so stay tuned. And welcome back to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Ferrinini, and I'm here today in studio with my guest, Tonya Pinheiro, who is a wake-up artist, which is a term she coined to describe her mission and work as a sound healer, inner life and dream facilitator, and ascension path practitioner. And her website is wakeupworks.org, WAKEUPWORKS.org. So, hey, Tonya.
Hi.
How are you there?
Good.
All right. Good, good, good. And I just want to let people know that what you just listened to was a cut called Wake Up and Dream. The vocals were by Gail Tossing of Heartsong and written by Ed Tossing and Tom Bishop. And that's from the CD Spirit of Love. So, we were talking about this amazing, I would almost say, like a, I said it was a, the energy of grace was given to you. You said it was more the I Am presence that visited you in an energetic manner. But I'm also noticing that your company is the Wake Up Company. Mm-hmm. So obviously this is very personal for you.
Very much so.
You see that this is something that not only you can experience, but a lot of people can experience. And I see, my sense is that the passion behind what you do has to do with really that having had that experience in your life and knowing that that experience is there for everyone to take part in and really see their life in new ways. But my sense is that, and you had also said to me on break, that it has to do for you around beliefs and assumptions that we have sort of kind of brought into our mental mindset as to who we are and how we are in the world. So how do you break that down? How do you allow people to start to see themselves from a greater perspective, from the spiritual perspective? And how do you also work with corporations, which you do this as well, to help them with their beliefs and assumptions?
Mm-hmm. First, I would say that beliefs, the things that we believe, is what makes us experience the world the way we do. But they often come from consensus with everybody around us, with the media, with our teachers, our parents, all the people that have raised us, that our beliefs are creations and constructs of the mind that come as a result of our outer experience.
Of how we've been taught the world is.
Is. And then we create beliefs either in agreement with that or in opposition to that.
Well, we also create beliefs. My understanding is that we limit ourselves by what we believe about ourselves to be. And I, there's a, you know how you get the little tea bags and they have the little sayings on them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it says, if you want to doubt something, doubt your limits.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
And I read on someone's website where, you know how we say, you got to think outside the box?
There you go.
And then this website said, there is no box.
Oh, scary.
Scary. When I saw that, I was like, yes, that's what I'm talking about. That right there. There is no box to get outside of.
Right. Limitless.
Okay. Limitless. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So as I went through this process of, I'm calling it my deconstruction process.
Dream awakening.
My dream awakening.
Mm-hmm.
My ascension path.
Mm-hmm.
Because ascension path to me has to do with ascending your spirit into its fullness, like raising it up into its fullness. And it required me to really understand and look at every single thing I believed about every single thing that happened to me in my life. And make decisions about, am I going to continue to make choices based on this event that took place because I believe it's going to happen to me again. So this is what happens. So a person has a traumatizing experience, a disappointing experience, something in relation to someone else. Their ego self says, I am your protector. Therefore, the next time I see anything that comes even close to looking like that thing, I'm going to make sure that we I protect you from it.
Right.
So we're going to make certain choices. We're going to assume that we know where that person's going with that action, and we will respond accordingly. Now, that takes us, that keeps us living in the past, number one. These things happen instantaneously.
Yeah.
So much so that after the first trauma, maybe the second one that looks like it, is completely internalized. It runs, it goes into the subconscious, and we never see it again. That just becomes us.
So it almost locks into your DNA, and it also becomes like the ghost program in the machine that's now running the whole show.
Correct.
That you're not even aware of.
Yep.
And then you say, well, every time I come to that fork in the road, I always take the right.
Right.
Why is that?
Right. So that's what the inner work has to do with. That's why I call myself an inner life coach or inner life facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not therapy. I'm not doing therapy so much as helping people to understand the mechanisms that are operating inside. So if I was raped as a child, I'm going to have certain reactions throughout the entire of my life about my safety and men. Okay? My grandfather died when I was 3. I didn't find out until I was 42 years old that his death at my age of 3, he was my protector in my household. He had a heart attack. Bing, he was gone.
Yeah.
That the people that you love the most, that you sink into and trust that they're always going to be there, aren't going to be there. Therefore, you can't trust that anybody is ever going to stay with you that loves you. In other words, if somebody really loves you, they're going to leave you. So you better leave them first so you don't get hurt.
Okay, so that's the belief.
42 years old, it took me to realize that that's where it came from. These things make us who we are. I have a belief that there is a divine being that I am an expression of. That belief evolved over my lifetime. I didn't believe that at first. I believed what I was told. God's out there. I'm over here. If I'm a good girl, I can make it to heaven. But more often than not, because of my, I was raised in a Catholic tradition, I'll end up in purgatory forever. Because I can't ever.
You've got to be paying your dues.
I've got to pay my dues forever. Okay? Then I read, and I find out, no. Purgatory and hell are right here. Right here on this planet. This is purgatory and hell.
Yeah.
All that stuff is just like concepts to keep you scared.
A darn good job done.
Darn good job. Okay? Who made them the boss? That I have to believe in. I'm telling you, this is like, who made them the boss? They may have made themselves the boss, quote unquote, the boss.
But we're the ones that keep giving them the key.
Keep giving them the key. Keep giving them the power. Keep giving them that, yes, I believe you. Yes, okay, whatever you say.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm raised in a tradition that says you must always have a job so that you can always pay your rent and your bills. You must be a responsible citizen. Okay? And I did that my whole adult life. Okay? The day came when I discovered that I was in an emotionally abusive relationship with my boss. So much so, now I've evolved since, you know, when I was a little kid. So now I have skills. I discover that I cannot stay in this situation any longer. As soon as I say, I have to get out of here because I can't affect this anymore. He's all his circumstance is causing him to be this way. I understand why he's treating me like this, but he ain't stopping, so I have to move on. My religious upbringing, my parental upbringing, my own life experiences all say to me, you must have another job to go to before you leave so that you can maintain the continuity of paying your bills and la, la, la. And it got so bad, I just had to quit without another job to go to.
So you had to step out on faith.
I stepped out on faith, okay? That's exactly what I did. I'm talking to God. I'm like, okay, I'm doing, I'm stepping out. And I never got another day job ever again.
Now, to me, I find that what I hear over and over again from people is there has to be some kind of momentous moment where you kind of stop thinking about what's the right thing to do, and you just take that leap and you say, I don't think anymore about what's the right thing to do. There's a part of me that knows what I need to do, and I have no knowledge of why I believe that, but there's been no more deeper truth that I have felt in my being mm-hmm. than that knowing. Mm-hmm. Is that close to where
that's
you are?
That's exactly it. Indiana Jones and the yeah. Temple of Doom, and he steps off the cliff. That was the most fabulous scene of all time.
I agree.
And it looks like there's this chasm.
Yep.
And he says, okay, I got to do this. And he puts his foot out into midair, and boom, he lands on something
mm-hmm.
that he couldn't see until he changed his orientation.
Right.
And that's what happened to me. And my lifestyle changed completely. I got more deeply immersed in my spiritual practice and way of being and what I'm offering to the world.
Mm.
I'm becoming more connected to my divinity. My ego self is in an uproar because it's like, oh my God, what are you doing? You know, I have all these credentials for the business world.
Mm, mm.
You know, I've got a master's in organizational management, and I've got a bachelor's in legal services, and you know, I've got all this experience behind
me.
Right. I couldn't even get an interview. I could not get an interview with anybody. Never mind, just did they even get my resume. So I had to reinvent everything.
Mm.
And that's when the Wake Up Company became like an expression of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So now I discover I can bring my work world, human resources, organizational development self
mm-hmm.
and merge in these kinds of spiritual concepts into work groups to help them understand what the dynamics are that are causing them to not be able to work well together
mm-hmm.
and to bring them spiritual concepts without using the word spiritual.
Absolutely.
And people loved it. They loved it. And I remember I did this group, little retreat with this just small work group. There was like five or six women at MIT in this particular office. And the woman that hired me was like all excited about it. And her colleague told me at the end of the day that I spent with them, she says, I need to tell you this. I knew you were going to fail at this.
Mm.
And you proved me wrong. Well, honey, that was the highest praise I could have ever gotten. When somebody goes into a situation knowing that you're, oh, that person's not going to do what we need
mm-hmm.
her to do.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the way that I work is that I stay in the moment. Yes, I've got the plan, and these are the things that we're going to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But within each little segment, I'm listening. I'm grokking people. I'm talking to my intuition. I'm listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, what do they need? What's really behind what she just said? What's the question should I be asking? So I'm in this constant dance with spirit. And that's why, and I can't describe that to people
mm-hmm,
when I'm working
mm-hmm,
with them.
Mm-hmm.
I do that with my sound healing. I do that with my singing. I do all the things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the basic plan, and then I step into the room.
So you're 100% there. People know that they're not only being heard, but they're being seen.
Yep.
And they're being known,
yep.
and perhaps even being grokked in fullness,
yeah,
if
yeah,
you
yeah.
want to go back to
yeah,
Stranger yeah. in a Strange Land by Robert
yeah.
Heinlein. So, and you're able to be fluid and bring in this fluid energy,
mm-hmm.
but it's all being orchestrated by your deeper connection to spirit, even
right.
though you're not bringing that into the conversation.
That's exactly right. And I really feel like that's the whole point. is that we're bringing heaven onto earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've gone through this past 30, 40 years of trying to get our earthly self into a heavenly state. And now that we've got that, now we've got to bring it back down into the body so that we're divine expressions all mushing with each other, getting our work done,
mm-hmm.
getting the work done.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to, at this point, just open up the phone lines. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 617-824-8100, 617-824-8100, with my guest today, Tonya Pinheiro. And give us a call and let us know what your thoughts are, or perhaps what questions you might have. I want to, if we could, kind of go 180 degrees from where we've been. I'm curious as to how you see yourself in this approaching 2012 world that we are sort of in, coming into, and how you see your light as kind of being part of the forces of light that are helping this new awakening to take place on the planet.
Mm-hmm. First, I see myself as an anchor and a pillar of light. Because the world out there, and I'm going to, and the media, which is how people understand their world,
sure.
through the media.
Yeah.
I feel like one part of my job is to always be grounded, centered, balanced, so that as things are going on around me, I can maintain a central core of calmness. So that if anybody is trying to access their calmness, I'm holding that energetic so that it can be accessed by anybody who needs to access it. Instant immediate example is this Hurricane Irene that came up the coast.
Oh, yeah.
So while everybody's in panic mode, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I'm noticing myself being extremely calm. And I went through my day, and I went to the store, and I came back home, and I made my preparations. And do I need to board up windows? No, I don't. Do I need to do this? Yes, I do.
Mm.
So there was this kind of methodical thing going on. But that's part of my job. Another part of my job is to say out loud and make connections with people and continue to acknowledge that we are the divine beings that we wish we were. We're doing it. We know it. We have it. We're doing it. And as I do any group thing that I do, I always reinforce that with people.
You're solidifying it.
As you go through your daily life, you are the God, goddess, the angel, the whatever,
mm-hmm.
doing daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Just know that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a personal mission to deal with fear. And at one point early, this was back even in my 20s, I went through this thing of, I eat fear for breakfast, bring it on. Okay? Because it's only a construct
mm-hmm.
of the mind
mm-hmm.
to keep us from finding out what's on the other side of it.
Mm.
And every time I pushed through it, I found out that what was on the other side of it was delight, joy, not what I thought, no big thing, a delightful surprise. It was never anything bad, never for me.
Hmm.
Fear stops you from knowing the truth.
Mm.
So that's been another one of my little
mm-hmm.
things
mm-hmm.
that I do and that I share.
That's an important piece. Yeah.
So 2012, I don't know if I answered it all the way or not, but I also don't think that the world's going to fall apart, although it's going to fall apart for people in terms of how they perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's more of us on the planet now than anyone ever dreams of. When I say us, mm-hmm. I'm talking about people that are on a path of light and service, on a path of bringing people together instead of breaking people apart, on a path of understanding what they are at their core, at their source, as a divine being, mm-hmm. and making that connection with each other. Like when I first started talking with you and we were talking about little things and, you know, we talked about, well, this landline is the best number to reach me, and we both have a cell phone, but I don't turn it on unless I'm on the street. Well, we both do that. Right. You know, and it's like 10 years ago it would have been so what, but this now it's like, see, there's a oneness thing going on. But I think for me, and especially this ascension path thing, it's all in the details. It's not in the big, I am this big person in the world that is passing my blessings on to you. Mm-hmm. And I could be a big person in the world. Mm-hmm. It's like, did you make the soup
mm-hmm.
so people can eat?
Did you do the one small thing that we need in order for the world to keep turning?
There you go. That thing.
Yeah.
Like I remember one day a friend of mine was sitting, getting ready to sit down on the couch next to me, and I looked down at the couch and I saw this glint and realized that I had a needle, a sewing needle, just in the couch where I had sewn something and just stuck it there for a minute, and their butt was coming down on this needle, and I went and I snatched it away really fast and they didn't get stuck. That's what I'm talking about. It's that having just enough conscious awareness to do the thing you need to do in the moment, which is also why I love improvisation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're also doing all these other healing modalities, so mm-hmm. that must also kind of open you up. You've got Jori, you've got, what's the other one, Deeksha, which is the oneness blessing,
yep.
and then there's a third
magnified healing. Yep.
How has the oneness blessing enhanced the way you see the world? Has the oneness blessing enhanced the way you see the world?
I think that it has allowed me to see people, to see past their physical bodies, and to know that that's me over there. That's another version of me. And I'm not saying that from like an ego place. I'm saying it from a recognition that if there is a oneness, like if we're all one, what does that really mean? It means that there is only one thing. We called it God, but I like to call it Source. That's all there is. And then it differentiated itself into all these like countless, infinitely diverse expressions of itself. As I'm beginning to understand what is oneness, it means that the rapist is me, and the priest is me, and the homeless guy is me, and the mom is me, and the kid is me, and the aunt is me, and the tree is me, and the sky is me, and I can go on and on listing things, but everything is some part of the oneness that I am.
Now, doesn't that also get down to some of the basic concepts that the indigenous people have been probably saying for 100,000 years? So your Native Americans, your Aborigines, your Huna shamans in Hawaii, all the ayahuascan swollen shamanic practitioners in South and Central America, they all have that at the core of their beliefs, but we don't live from that.
Right. Unless we do.
And I believe that that's where the 2012 energy is really coming into, is that we're all being asked in very small ways to start to live the truth that is, I'm going to say, impregnated in our cellular structure, in our DNA, but we have not been awake to for maybe centuries.
Yep.
And now I believe that in some respects, what you're saying and what you're being in the world is a small point of light mm-hmm. that is starting to spread in consciousness to many, many more people.
Right. And it's a hard thing to swallow when the whole construct of 3D is about duality. And
right.
there's got to be an
right.
other over there.
Right.
There's got to be that thing over there
right.
that I can love or hate or whatever. Okay?
Yeah.
And when I take that away, mm-hmm. well, what's left? It's this, what is it in Lakech? I don't know what, it's not, it's like a Mayan phrase in Lakech. Mm. It means I am another you.
Mm.
I'm another yourself.
Right.
And so I had that as my tagline for a long time, you know, because it kept reminding me that if I'm getting triggered by this person, they're just showing me something that's in me that I'm not aware of yet. If I'm not affected by this person at all, then that's just another one of me floating by.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm like instantly attracted to this person, then that's another aspect of me that I'm seeing, that I'm resonating with.
Mm-hmm.
And all those different variations are there to experience yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not your ego self. It's your divine self in manifestation.
Right. And that's powerful, just to allow your mind to just kind of wander around in, because it's not something that we get in the textbook. It's not something we've been taught in school. It's not something we hear at the place of worship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly not something that I know for me, when I'm sitting down with a bunch of friends talking, that we bring up and chew around.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But it is that kind of basic truth with a capital T that I think, again, what the work that you're doing, Tonya, and the path that you've been journeying on for so long, I don't think that you're as much on it by yourself now as perhaps in your life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are more and more people that are starting to wake up to this. And I just want to say how much I've appreciated having you as my guest today in studio, for all that you bring and for how much you shared today.
Thank you.
And thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And my guest today on Planetary Spirit in Studio has been Tonya Pinheiro, who is a wake-up artist. And a wake-up artist is a term she coined to describe her mission and work as a sound healer, inner life and dream facilitator, and ascension path practitioner. And her website is www.wakeupworks.org. That's wakeupworks.org. And coming up, my guest will be, for Psychic Circle Tuesday, the Reverend Kathy Burke and her daughter Christina Burke, who are the owners of Angels of Light, a healing and holistic center in Norwood, Mass., and they'll be on hand to answer questions that you might have. And if you're enjoying this program and would like to access past interviews, go to planetary-spirit.com for on-demand archives of past shows, where recent interviews are now available on the Planetary Spirit website. And be sure to sign up for the email list to receive monthly updates for who my upcoming guests will be, as well as the quarterly newsletter. And so, this is Jeff Fiorinini of Planetary Spirit, wishing you a blessed day.